ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of Deptford, it is a great honor and privilege for me tonight, as Reeve of Deptford, to welcome our brave boys and heroes back from the front. In order that Deptford might never forget those who fought and returned, and in order that our heroes should never lose sight of Deptford's gratitude, every one of these heroes will receive from us an engraved watch.
I was the only man in uniform on the stage itself, but in the front row were six others. And on the right-hand end of this group sat Percy Boyd Staunton in a major's uniform, and at his side, Leola Cruikshank. On the fourth finger of Leola's left hand was a large diamond ring.
I call Major Percy Boyd Staunton to come up on the stage.
Percy accepted his watch with an air. He'd put on his cap before coming on the stage, and he saluted the dignitaries there smartly, then turned and saluted the audience. As I grinned and clapped, my stomach burned with jealousy. I should have been generous, for I was number 7, a VC, and the only man to be given a seat on the stage, the only man to receive his watch from the hands of our Member of Parliament.
Sergeant Dunstable Ramsay!
As I'd left my hat outside, I couldn't salute, so I had to bob my head and then bob it at the audience. When it was done, I was surrounded by old friends and acquaintances who wanted to talk and shake my hand. I hurried through them as quickly as I could without being rude, for I had a little task to perform.
Percy! Let me shake that hand.
Oh, it's good to see you.
Leola.
You're looking great.
I'm certainly not going to shake your hand.
Dunstable, I think you should...
Denny, listen, I think you ought to know...
Darling, you don't know how good it is to see you.
Leola and I have a secret to tell you. Not that it'll be a secret long, of course, but we want you to be the first to hear, outside of our families, of course. We are engaged.
Well. The best man has won.
Wow.
I think I should have a kiss on that, Leola.
Now, Dunstable, I am. Whoa.
The next day, I made a melancholy tour through my old home. Everything was where I knew it should be, but it all looked small and dull. Want of love had withered it. I picked up a few things I wanted, particularly something that I'd long kept hidden, and got out as fast as I could.
Well, well, if it isn't Deptford's favorite son himself.
Hello, Milo. How are you?
Sit right here. No waiting for heroes.
Thank you.
It's been a long time since you've been in Papel's barbershop.
Mm-hmm.
Geez, Dunny, this is the first time I ever give you a haircut. You know that?
I suppose that's right.
Trimmed your paw a couple of times after you went to the front, but never you.
Well.
Comes of being the same age, I guess, eh?
I guess, yeah.
But now I'm taking over more and more from the old man.
How is your father?
His heart's not so good now. He says it's breathing up little bits of hair all his life. He says it forms a kind of hairball in barbers, and a lot of them go that way. I don't believe it. Unscientific. He never got past third grade, you know?
Well?
You got a double crown. Did you know that? Makes it hard to give you a good cut.
Yeah, I've been told.
What are you going to do with the old place? Live there, eh?
Oh, hardly think so.
Nice place to settle down if you was to get married. But I guess you won't be marrying Leola, eh?
Doesn't seem...
Mind you, for them that had the eyes to see, there was never an instant's doubt she was Percy's girl. Never an instant's. Oh, I know you and her had some close moments before you went to the war. Everybody's seen that, and they kind of laughed. Had to laugh myself. It was just what we called war fever. You in uniform, you see?
I see.
But you gotta admit she played fair. Wrote to you right up to the end. Jerry Williams used to tell us the letters come through the post office every second Monday, like clockwork, because she wrote you every second Sunday. You know that?
Yes, well.
But when Percy finished up at that school in Toronto in the summer of 17, he didn't hesitate for a minute. Not for a minute. Into training right away and went over as an officer and come back a major and a DSO. But you're the VC, eh, boy? I guess you had a stroke of luck. I never got enlisted, flat feet. But you and Purse had the luck, I guess. He used to come down here as often as he could, and it was easy seeing where Leola'd give her heart.
Uh-huh.
You were the main attraction last night, eh? Yeah.
Oh,
you were the candy kid
no,
with gum feet and taffy legs. Well, one taffy leg, anyhow. But not with Leola. She's give her heart.
Yes, I think that's settled, Marlo.
Geez, the war made a difference in this little old burg. Unsettled. You know what I mean? So many changes. The flu beat everything, though. Spanish influenza, they called it. But I always figured it was worked up by the Huns in some way. Geez, this burg was like the Valley of the Shadow for weeks.
Mm.
Of course, we felt it more than most in here. A barber always has everybody breathing on him, you see. The old man and me, we hung bags of asafoetida around our necks to give the germs a fight. But, oh, people just drop like flies, like flies. McCausland worked 24 hours a day, I guess. Doc Staunton moved out to one of his farms to live and sort of gave up practice. But he'd been mostly a farmer in a big way for years.
Mm-hmm.
Rich man now. Your ma, Dunny. God, she was a wonderful woman. Never let up nursing and taking soup and stuff around till your dad went. You know, he wouldn't go to bed. Struggled on when he was sick. Of course you could tell. Blue lips. Yeah, just as blue as huckleberries. That was the sign. We gave him 48 hours after that. Your dad kept on with his lips as blue as a Sunday suit for a day. Then he just fell beside the makeup stone, and Jumper Saul got him home on a dray. Your ma lost heart, and she was gone herself before the week was out. Fine, folks. Next issue of the Banner, Jumper Saul set up the whole front page just like a big death notice, edged in black. God, when I saw it, I just started bawling like a kid. Couldn't help myself. You know, in this little town of 500 and the district around, we lost 98 all told. But the worst was when Jumper set up the front page like a death notice. Everybody said he done right. A little more off the top?
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes. Massa Dempster went. Of course, he'd been no good for years, not since his trouble. You remember? Sure you do. We used to see you skin over there after school and climb through the window to see her and Paul. Nobody ever thought there was any wrong going on, of course. We knew your ma must have sent you. She couldn't do anything for the Dempsters publicly, of course. But she sent you to look after them. Everybody knew it and honored her for it. Do you remember how you said Mary Dempster raised Willie from the dead? God, you used to be a crazy kid, Dunny. But I guess the war knocked all that out of you.
Did Mrs. Dempster get the flu, too?
Miss Dempster? Oh, no. That kind is always spared when better folks have to go. But after Massa went, she was a problem. No money, you see. So the Reeve and Magistrate Mahaffey found out she had an aunt somewhere near Toronto. Weston, I believe it was. The aunt come and took her. The aunt had money.
And Paul went with her?
No, he didn't. Funny about him. Not 10 yet, but he run away. He had a kind of tough time in school, I guess. Couldn't fight much because he was so undersized. But kids used to get around him at recess and yell, "Hey, Paul, does your ma wear any pants?" And stuff like that. Just fun, you know, the way kids are. But he'd get mad and fight and get hurt, and they just tormented him more and more to see him do it. They'd yell across the street, "Who are you today, Paul?" Sly, you see, because he knew damn well they didn't mean, "How are you today, Paul?" But your ma's a whore. Kind of pun, I guess you'd call it. So when the circus was here, autumn of 18, he ran away with one of the shows. Mahaffey tried to catch up with the circus, but he never got nowheres with them. Tricky people. Funny, it was the best thing Paul ever done in a way. Because every kid wants to run away with a circus, and it made him a kind of hero after he'd gone. But Mary Dempster took it very bad and went clean off her head. Used to yell out the window at kids going to school, "Have you seen my son, Paul?" Would have been sad if we hadn't known she was crazy. And it was only 2 or 3 weeks after that, Massa got the flu and died. He certainly had a hard row to hoe. And inside a week, the aunt come, and we haven't seen hide nor hair of them since.
On Monday, after a short talk with the bank manager and the auctioneer, I boarded the train and left Deptford in the flesh. It was not for a long time that I recognized that I never wholly left it in the spirit. In the autumn of 1919, I entered University College in Toronto. I chose history as my special study because during my fighting days, I'd become conscious that I was being used by powers over which I had no control for purposes of which I had no understanding. History, I hoped, would teach me how the world's affairs worked. I gobbled up all the incidentals required to give a rounded education, such as French and German, and I was one of the handful of really interested students in religious knowledge. I worked rather hard. A dull fellow, I suppose. Youth was not my time to flower. Percy Boyd Staunton, however, flowered brilliantly. Like me, he had a new name.
I was never really happy with Percy, you know, particularly in the army. Then I decided to lop off the D in the middle name.
He was now Boy Staunton, and it suited him admirably because he summed up in himself so much of the glory of youth in the post-war period. He gleamed, he glowed, his hair was glossier, his teeth were whiter than those of common young men. He laughed a great deal, and his voice was musical. Where had his looks and style come from?
The Prince of Wales. Now, there's a man who knows how to live. You know, he's a real devil with the girls.
The prince was the epitome of romance and mystery, for over his puzzled brow hung the shadow of the crown. And Boy Staunton knew that he, too, had a crown awaiting him.
I'm studying law, Dunny, not because I mean to practice it, but it's good training for business. And who knows, maybe eventually politics.
He was the quintessence of the jazz age, a Scott Fitzgerald character. I met him fairly often. Brilliant young men seemed to need a dull listener, just as pretty girls need a plain friend to set them off.
I mean, it's not a long-term affair. It's just a pass for a few weeks, you understand? I'm not in love with her like I am with Leola. It's just a little fun. How can it hurt Leola? It's not really being unfaithful, is it?
It's a matter of personal morality, isn't it?
Oh, come on, Dunny. Don't be a stuffed shirt. Leola told me she once thought she had a pass on you. And we all know how important that was.
War fever.
Exactly.
When Boy married Leola in St. James's Presbyterian Church in Deptford, I was his best man in a hired morning suit and a top hat, in which I looked like an ass. It was the most fashionable wedding in Deptford's history. Everyone agreed that Leola was a radiant bride. Even in the awful wedding rig-out of 1924, she looked good enough to eat with a silver spoon. Leola's parents, minor figures at the wedding, not being in a position to entertain, wept with joy in the church. Up the front, without much to do, I could see who wept and who grinned. After the wedding, I was going to Europe to reward myself for getting my M.A. I'd booked my passage second class on the CPR ship Melita. When I read the passenger list on my first hour aboard, I was not pleased to find Mr. and Mrs. Boy Staunton among the first class.
Damn. Literally on top of me. Well, let them find me. Be interesting to see if they do.
I really wish we could invite you up to first class, Dunny. But, you know, ship's rules. Oleola sends her love, of course. It's a pity you're not traveling first. The people you meet. There's a minister up there, Reverend George Ledbetter. You heard of him?
No, I can't say I have.
From New York. He makes Christianity make sense to me for the first time. I mean, Christ was really a very distinguished person. A prince of the House of David. A poet and an intellectual.
But surely he was a carpenter.
A carpenter, yes. All those Jews in Bible days could do something with their hands. But what kind of a carpenter? Not making cowsheds, I'll bet. Probably a designer or a manufacturer in terms of those days. Otherwise, how did he make his connections?
What connections do you mean?
Well, you know, when he was traveling around, staying with all kinds of rich and influential people. As an honored guest, obviously. He wasn't just bumming his way through Palestine. He was staying with people who knew him as a man of substance and an economist. driving the money changers out of the temple. Why? Because they were soaking the pilgrims' extortionist rates, that's why, and endangering a very necessary tourist attraction and rocking the economic boat. And it was a kind of market discipline, if you want to look at it that way, and he was the only one with the brains to see it and the guts to do something about it. You know, Ledbetter thinks that may have been back of the crucifixion.
Fascinating.
Ledbetter, he wants me to call him George. I've got to get rid of this English trick I've got of calling people by their surnames. George is going to introduce me to his tailor in London. You have to be introduced to the good ones, you know. I really wish you could get up to first class to meet him, Dunny.
Boy and Leola left the ship at Southampton. I went on to Antwerp because the first object of my journey was a tour of the battlefields. Unrecognizable, of course. Neat and trim, in the manner of the Low Countries. Trenches, known to me as stinking mud holes, were lined with cement, so that the ladies would not dirty their shoes. Even the vast cemeteries woke no feeling in me. Because they were so big, I lost all sense that they contained men. I got out as soon as I had scoured Passchendaele for some sign of the place where I had been wounded, and where I had encountered the little Madonna. Nobody I could find was of any use in suggesting where I might have been. The new town had probably buried it under the streets and houses. Figures of Our Lady? Yes, there were plenty of those in churches and on buildings, but none was anything like mine. I would have known her anywhere. I saw Madonnas of every period and material, and quickly came to know a fair amount about them. My mounting enthusiasm led me to scores of churches through the Low Countries, France, Austria, Italy.
This isn't just art for art's sake alone. This is about something.
It was the saints who baffled me. So I got to work on them as best I could. I found their legends delightful reading.
It's like the Arabian Nights.
I was a happy goat who had wandered into a wondrous enclosed garden of hagiology, and I grazed greedily and contentedly. When the time came at last for me to go home, I knew I'd found a happiness that would endure. Back in Toronto, I began my new job as schoolmaster at Colburn College, a job I chose principally because Colburn, being a private school, did not demand that I spend another year getting a provincial teacher's certificate. I didn't really think I would stay in teaching, but the boys liked me for my wooden leg, whose thuds in the corridor gave ample warning of my approach and allowed smokers, loafers, and dreamers to do whatever was necessary before I arrived. I'd now taken to using a cane, and a swipe with my heavy stick over the behind was preferred by all sensible boys to a tedious imposition. I may have been the despair of educational psychologists, but I knew boys, and I knew my stuff, and it quickly began to show up in examination results. Boyce Staunton was also distinguishing himself as an educator. He was educating Leola.
Leola never really had much chance to grow in that home of hers. Fine people, the Crookshanks, of course, but narrow. Now, she's really enjoying her mahjong and tennis lessons, and she's joined the Book of the Month Club.
Boy was now a rising young entrepreneur in sugar, with a foot in the world of soft drinks, candy, and confectionery. It was in 1927 that Boy's first instance of startling good fortune arrived, something that heaved him at a stroke into a higher sphere and maintained him there.
The most marvelous news, Dunny. The Prince of Wales is making a tour of Canada this year, and guess who's been chosen as aide-de-camp for the whole tour?
When Boy and Leola had their first child, the boy was conservatively but significantly christened Edward David.
Dunny, you want to get out of teaching. Not that it isn't a fine profession, but if you don't hurry up and let life know what you want, life will damn soon show you what you'll get.
I'm not sure I want to issue orders to life. I rather like the Greek notion of allowing chance to take a hand in my affairs. It was the autumn of 1928 that chance did so.